one of the things that was most striking to me was just how important the families were to each other, both the families that knew each other and then the families that grew out of the tragedy. One of the families we represented, Katie and Shane, who died in the landslide with their 4-year-old and 6-year-old, they loved that place so much, and they had such an enormous extended family that Shane's parents, Judy and Lewis, moved to the community to live essentially next door to be there with the grandkids, and that there was such a close-knit connection between all of those people that, you know, I think it was very simple, and, you know, playing in the water and having picnics and barbecues and being out there with nature.
I'd like you to tell me the story about the emails, and I ask it broadly because it's a complicated story, but basically there were emails in this case that were found to have been deleted. What happened, and how did you find out?
So the state had repeatedly delayed producing its final expert report, and in fact had been sanctioned by the court for disclosing new expert opinions on the close of discovery.
So the court had already said, hey, we're supposed to be done gathering evidence, and you're taking too much time, so we're going to sanction you for that.
Right, right. And so as a result of that, we ended up taking the experts, the state's experts' deposition very late in the case in the summer before the trial was supposed to start in October. And under an agreement of the parties, the state was to produce the expert files. Those expert files were to include expert communications. The state had 7 or 8 different experts that were geographically dispersed, but they were producing a single report, which meant that they all had to be communicating and collaborating. So the way that it kind of revealed itself was that we were preparing to take one of the first experts' depositions. We were looking at the files, and there was a file produced, like an Outlook file, and it said communications, and you opened it up, and there was nothing in it. So just as a matter of normal due diligence, my paralegal emailed the state's paralegal and said, are we missing something? Is there supposed to be something in the file? And we got back an email that said the file was correctly empty, which was just a weird turn of phrase. And so we went to the expert's deposition, laid the groundwork that the expert had been communicating by email with all of his colleagues across the United States, and that they regularly emailed each other. And then I asked him, why don't we have any emails? And to my surprise, he said quite plainly that the expert team had agreed at their first meeting that they would delete all of their emails, and that an attorney from the Washington AG's office was present during that conversation.
And yes. The attorney general at the time, Bob Ferguson?
Well, he wasn't there, obviously.
Right.
But
he was in charge of the
office. He was in charge of the office.
What happens in a conference room when something like that is uttered?
Inside, I was shocked because I didn't expect that to be the answer. I expected the answer to be like, oh, they're coming, they were misplaced or something. And so it was frankly shocking, and the whole room, I think, felt it when the answer came out so plainly that, nope, we just deleted everything with no remorse, with no sense that it was wrong. From an attorney's perspective at that point, you know, you have your game face on, right? You're not showing the shock. You just need to have your face that says, tell me more. Talk to me some more about that. And so we went on and asked questions, like the reporter questions, who, what, when, where, right? Of like, well, who else was in the room and how long were you there? And we got through some of those base questions and then finally got to a point where it felt like, okay, we can take a break because we didn't really know what the response would be from the other side, whether the state's attorneys knew this, didn't know this, was this a surprise to them? They certainly didn't seem surprised by it in the deposition, so... And I think what made it so egregious was that there were probably no less than 5 or 6 major opportunities when the state could have stood up and said, oh, we have a problem here. We've been deleting all of this stuff. You keep asking for it. We keep saying we're going to give it to you and not telling you, oh, we deleted it. And so there were lots of opportunities for the state to to get ahead of this, and they didn't. And not only that, when the whole thing was uncovered, after we took deposition after deposition of the experts who said, yes, we all deleted it, the state took other steps that delayed kind of admitting to the problem and essentially tried to say that it really wasn't a problem. And that was equally shocking. The judge was going to allow us to ask questions about the email deletion in front of the jury. There would have been a jury instruction read saying, you should know the experts deleted the emails and the state knew about it. And you should infer from that what you will.
What did not having those emails mean for the people who were seeking damages?
Well, I don't know that we'll ever know. There were some experts who did not delete all of their emails, they say by happenstance. Some of those emails revealed that the state had gathered information that would have supported the plaintiff's theories of the case. A big issue in the case was what impact the crib wall that had been built at the base of the landslide, what impact that had on the magnitude of this slide. And we learned from some of the expert emails that were recovered that the presence of that loose landslide material held back by this crib wall so that it didn't erode over time as it normally would have was the killing force of the landslide. And so I think not having the full scope of the emails and the investigation that was done doesn't allow us to really fully understand what happened.
Was not going to trial kind of a double-edged sword for people who were affected by this?
Absolutely. I think the trial would have shown, I think the evidence of trial would have shown that the man-made alterations to the land that people knew about and the dangers that the state knew about and the county knew about but that they didn't talk about to people, the evidence would have shown that was part of the contributing factor for the magnitude of what had happened. And so that full story, I don't think, has been really told.
This was a disaster caused by humans, in some part at least, mismanaging nature. And it can be pretty extreme here in Washington State, nature. And so I wonder if there are other danger areas, other problem spots that people should be made aware of, that you became aware of as you started looking into what was going on in OSO.
Well, I think there are. And I think what you say is true. I mean, this nature started this process of the OSO landslide, but what people did to the slide area to protect salmon, frankly, out of good intentions, but not really understanding the full scope of what they did, led to greater harm. And so, are there other areas in Washington State that people should be concerned about? I'm sure there are. I do think that we are starting that process of becoming more aware of what those areas are. The state has done some things, the enhancement of LIDAR that allows us to see kind of the geographic landscape in a better sense and to make those publicly available so that you can go on a website and look up your own backyard and see what's there. And in my experience since the case, more and more people are just aware that they need to ask those questions for themselves and not rely on the government. I think when we look at the story of Amanda Lennick.
Tell me about Amanda Lennick.
Amanda, so she was a nurse. She was 31 years old at the time she died. She had bought her house in Steelhead Haven about 11 days before the landslide. She had been looking in a lot of places. She did her due diligence. She talked to her neighbors. She had looked at other properties where it looked like there was a big hill behind them, maybe not buy that house. So she did everything right and found herself in this situation. And if, for instance, the geologic hazard map had shown that the landslide hazard was not just where the actual landslide was, but the runout area of a landslide, she wouldn't have bought that house, And so to me, that is such an example of, where we can do better and where this tragedy for Amanda would not have happened if the information had been made available to her.
Are we any further down that road? Is that information available now?
I think in some places it is. I don't think that there is a lot of, in the geologic hazard mapping, that there is not a lot of showing where the runouts are. So there might be an indication of where a prior landslide happened. But in the looking at where could this landslide go, or am I in an area where there is a potential for debris flow, that information is not, as far as I know, as widely available as it should be. And certainly at the time was not.
The state told me on the phone yesterday that they had, before the landslide, basically one half of a geotechnical engineer working on landslides. He was one person full time, but half of his time was tsunamis and other hazards, and then half of his time was landslides. And now they have six people just working on landslides full time, which seems like your face suggests not enough.
Not enough. I mean, I know we have lots of challenges in our state, and we have to address many things, but the natural hazards in our state that are worsened by human activity here, I think, deserve our attention, especially after the tragedy that happened.
Emily Harris, thank you for your time.
Thank you.